Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Tuesday, July 15th, 2014. With me today, I have Dave Hamilton. How are you, Dave?
I am very Dave today.
You know, I don't think we could ask for anything more.
You could ask for less, but you wouldn't get it.
And that's exactly as it should be. Yeah. Also, with me today, John Martellaro. How are you, John?
I'm good. I've got my walk in this morning. I'm feeling very good.
Awesome. And you're looking quite dapper to boot.
Oh, well, thank you.
You know what you can do to turn that walk into a run, John?
I don't think my knees would appreciate that.
Yeah, but if you hire somebody to chase you, then you would run.
And remember, John, if it's zombies, you'll only need to be faster than the slowest guy.
I was walking last week, and about 100 yards in front of me, I saw a dog that was so big, not on a leash, all by itself, and looked like it weighed about 150 pounds. I retraced my steps, went the other way.
You didn't leave us time for a how big was it line.
Oh, man, it was like a mastiff.
That's awesome. Saddle that thing up and ride it around.
Then you don't even need to walk to get wherever you go every morning.
No, I would be eating for lunch.
and hopefully a tasty lunch. Well, hopefully. Before we hop into the topics, I just wanted to point out that yesterday I got comments from several different places from people offering up ideas on what Apple could do to make this whole thing with not knowing what words you can and can't engrave on an iPad easier to deal with. The consensus is Apple needs to write a list, and I'm thinking that's a great idea. You can go down the list and see exactly what words you can't use. Bonus, you'll probably learn a few words that you can start using in family dinner conversations as well. So anyhow, thank you everyone for giving me feedback on that, because it's nice to know that people are out there paying attention.
That's a good thing.
Yeah. Okay, the first topic that I wanted to hop into today is the news that Apple is starting up an iPhone-based mobile payment system in Japan. And the way this thing works, you load up your iTunes account with extra money as opposed to paying after you make a purchase, which is the way your iTunes account typically works. So this would be more like if you had, say, a Starbucks card. You load up the card, and then you spend against the card when you're out of money. You load it back up again. And that's pretty much how this works, except you don't have a physical card. You have a new entry in Passbook. And for now, you can use this new version of your iTunes account to pay for apps through the App Store, or you can go into an Apple retail store and make purchases there. It's only available in Japan for now, and I'm curious what you guys think.
So if let's say I – and you may not know the answer to this, but this is the first thing that comes to mind, is if I go to use this somewhere and I let's say what I want costs $10, and I realize it's Japan, but you know, and I only have $5 in credit, is there a way I can have it auto-deduct the next – you know, $25 that I tell it can do, you know, from my account, or am I out of luck and I got to go and add more money and then come back around?
That I don't know.
Because that sounds like a terrible user experience, what I just described. Easy Pass, I have, you know, which is in the Northeast, is the name of the RF technology that you use when you go through the tolls, right? Mm-hmm. And that works exactly the way I described. It charges, it's actually $25. And when I'm out, it just charges me again and replenishes my money. So
it wouldn't surprise me if they're doing something along the lines of that, or what Starbucks does, where you can set it up so that it automatically reloads your card, or you have to manually reload it.
And you get to pick. Yeah.
Yeah, and I can see where for some people having to manually reload would be better because it makes it easier for them to manage what they're spending.
Right.
But for the rest of us, auto load, baby.
Well, yeah, right. Yeah, at least let the user decide. But, and I realize I might have gotten us off track. I just, when I hear about things like that, it's like, oh, that's an interesting reversal of the way things could be. But it makes it potentially faster to process a transaction. I don't know.
Bypass. That's why you do testing. There are not those things.
Right.
Well, my guess is that Apple is keeping this very limited right now because they want to see what breaks and what people like and what they don't like.
Yep.
And then they can sort all that out and use the Japanese market as their test bed. And once they've got this all hammered out, maybe in time for the launch of iOS 8, then they can expand it to other countries and potentially other retailers.
Right. No, that makes good sense. Yeah. I think it – I mean – listen, you know, I have moved to in the fall, right? I got from the folks at Spec, they had sent me whatever their fall lineup was of cases. And one of the things was, I think it's called the Candy Shell Card. It's on my phone now, but I think it's the Candy Shell Card. But it's an iPhone 5 case that I can slip three cards or two cards and some, you know, amount of cash if I want into. And I got it just before I went to Mac Tech. And I thought, well, this will be great. I want to test this case out. And so I figured traveling is perfect because I can put my company credit card in there, my driver's license, which I'll need like at the airports and even checking into hotels. And then my room key can go in there. And this will be perfect because then I don't have to worry about, you know, forgetting to grab my key or whatever when I leave the room, because the chances of me leaving the room without my phone are much less than the chances of me leaving the room without the key that I just happened to throw on the table. And I figured I would take it off the moment that I got back from this show. The case, of course, has been on my phone ever since because here at home, I keep slightly different things. I keep a personal credit card, a business credit card, and my license in there. But it's awesome because all those times now that I would go to get in the car or actually get in the car and leave and realize, I don't have my wallet with me, don't matter anymore because I have all the things that I would need. And I keep some cash in the car, in the glove box. I've been doing that for a decade because it's just better to always have emergency cash. But I rarely use cash. You know, I can use a card or whatever. And so, you know, I've already moved to a plan that is somewhat like what's being discussed here, and it's awesome. It a plan in that my phone has everything I need to make purchases, right? And this makes it even better, obviously, because it's right now, it's a hack. It's not actually my phone. It's a case with all the stuff that I used to use. But this takes us down that path, which it totally makes sense. It's how it will be. It just depends on who gets us there.
What I love is how Apple sequences the technology. They put the pieces into place. You can almost imagine senior director at Apple with a whiteboard drawing on the board. And this is what we have to have first. We have to have Touch ID, and we have to add, and then we introduce Passbook, and then we get iTunes straightened out for, you know, purchases in the store, and then you draw this like flow chart, and then you see and then step by step you see the technologies appear as Apple develops them and refines them. It's awesome to watch.
I like that, John. I hadn't stepped back and thought about it that way. That's I'm glad you're on this show. That's good.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I just thought of another thing. Going this system eliminates all of the questions about whether or not Apple has to set a standard for NFC chips and companies have to go out and buy all this new hardware. If you have a barcode scanner that's high enough resolution to be able to read your iPhone screen, and that's not that difficult to do anymore, then really it becomes a matter of adding software to a retailer's system as opposed to having to throw everything out and start over with a new system.
Right.
Well, what's interesting to me is I got a letter from my credit card company a while back mentioning that they're switching over to the microchip technology in the credit cards, and it's going to be rolled out in parts of the United States this fall. And presumably, it's going to be in full swing in the United States in 2015. It's something that's been done in Europe for a long time, where you have a smart credit card with a chip, encrypted data on it and a chip. And I wonder how that's going to mesh with Apple system, whether there's going to be any competition between these two systems or whether they're complementary. I don't know yet.
I'd be surprised if there's any competition. For some reason, the United States has never been big on chipped cards. So
yeah, but after the Target incident and a couple other incidents, I get the feeling from the letter I got that this is going to happen in the U.S. now.
Who sent you the letter, John?
My credit card company.
Yeah, I'm not convinced. We have prioritized convenience over security so much over the years, and credit cards are such a huge part of that.
Bank may be one of the leaders in that area because they have a lot of international customers.
Yeah, no, I have a Citibank card, my personal card. When it renewed earlier this year, it's a smart card now. You know, it's got that chip on it. Mm-hmm. I have a smart card reader, but only because I worked for Citibank years ago, and we used smart cards for this telephone that we made. Actually, had a PCXT baked inside of it, and you could dial into the bank. It was actually I tell you about it another time, but you know, I could read it to a point. It's all encrypted, like you said, but. That's the only smart card reader I've ever seen in the United States. So, other than the other ones that we had at Citibank at the time. So,
wow,
yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, and that was how long ago was that? 25 years ago? 20 years ago? The early '90s, right? So that's
pretty telling, right there.
That's exactly what I'm saying. Is right. The banks were working on this. We actually had our customers using it. The people that were using the phone could not use the phone without putting their card in, and we sent them out special Citi cards being their ATM cards, but you had to have a Citi card with the chip on it, and everybody liked it because it was like, ooh, fancy, you know, mine's a smart card, but that was it, and that even died because now obviously people just use their computers to access direct access or Citibank.com or whatever you call it. So
we only have a couple minutes left.
I'm sorry.
No, oh no, don't apologize, because this is awesome, and I know we could just go on forever just on this, but I wanted to hit another topic real quick, and this is the news that Nest and Samsung and a few other companies have teamed up to create a new standard called Thread, and Thread is a wireless networking protocol for smart home devices. So what they're trying to do is get people on board to use this instead of the Wi-Fi networks we already have or Bluetooth. And it's based on – well, it's not based on. It actually is Zigbee's technology. And Zigbee's been around for a little while, but they haven't had luck getting widespread adoption because they've allowed their platform to become fragmented. And I have a feeling that you guys probably have some ideas on this.
Well, let me start, Dave.
Go ahead. Yeah.
I looked at the threadgroup.org page, and I was aghast at their three giant blocks of marketing. The first one is powerful technology. It's hard to get devices to talk to one another. When they start off like that with me, they get off on the wrong foot with me.
Yeah.
You know? So right away, their credibility is a little blown. Thread changes all that. And then the second big block is simple, secure, and scalable. All thread networks are easy to set up, and they use AES encryption that closes security holes. And I'm going, seems to me like other communication protocols also know about encryption. So I didn't find that astounding. And then they said battery-friendly design, designed from the ground up to have extremely low power consumption. And I'm going, you know, is this really an issue, you know, with our home devices? You know, so their bullet points didn't really win me over.
So, I'm looking at this, and I'm learning about this as we're doing this, so I have not done a lot of research, but it seems like this 802.15.4, which is what this protocol is, mm-hmm. versus 802.11, right, which is what we use for and call
for Wi-Fi.
Commonly Wi-Fi, right. It says that it's a – 802.15.4 is a standard which specifies the physical layer and media access control for low-rate personal area networks, right? So this makes sense. We're not talking about pushing a lot of data across, right?
Right.
And we've got these devices that need to talk. I can't tell quickly here what spectrum – oh, okay. They are living in the 868 – to 920 in North America, it's 902 to 928 megahertz. So this is outside of the range of Wi-Fi. But then they also are living potentially in the 2400 to 2483 megahertz range, which we also know is 2.4 gigahertz, which is right where the worst of Wi-Fi contention happens, right? But the good news is that you've got 10 channels, which was then extended to, so you've got 30 channels on this band that can be used in North America, and the one in Europe allows one communications channel, which hopefully should change because that's crazy. But maybe it's not crazy. Maybe it doesn't matter. So maybe the benefit here is that this A lives outside the range of Wi-Fi and in theory won't interfere much. So that could be a good thing. And the other good thing is, you know, we're talking about the when it said low rate wireless, 802.11ac is what we're moving towards, but it's very expensive. You need multiple antennas to make that work. And you need radios that chew up more battery power and all of that. So if and most 802.11ac and 802.11n base stations can be dumbed down to and of course you're not going to do AC on 2.4 gigahertz and you probably would use 2.4 for this anyway. But 802.11n on 2.4 can also be set to allow itself to dumb down to, say, 802.11g, which is better for low-rate stuff and low power consumption. But, as we've all heard, when you've got a bunch of G devices that are communicating regularly on your N network, it forces the packet fragmentation on N and therefore potentially slows down what you can do with your faster devices on your end network. So all that kind of pulls together the need for this. Now, the Thread Group didn't explain it that way, John. They explained it in a poor marketing way. Yeah. And rightfully so, you know, lost credibility in your mind and mine too. But maybe there is actually a benefit to having these devices run slower.
Maybe there's a technical benefit there, but you know, it seems to me like they're running uphill against the politics of the situation. People in the home already have their Wi-Fi networks,
yes,
and they know how to use them, and so this is sort of like running against the grain. It's going to be tough.
Yeah, I agree.
I agree too, and I think the biggest issue out of all this for manufacturers will be trust, because as soon as you throw the Samsung name out there, there's a lot of people that will immediately become distrustful. And now that Google owns Nest, well, there you have that too. So, yeah. And on that exciting and happy note, we are out of time. So, Dave, thank you for joining me today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And John, thank you for being a trooper and coming back again today. You guys rock.
You bet.